Hey gang, just wanted to quickly let you know that Skype totally failed us this week. So we recorded with Zoom, which does not sound quite as good. So hopefully next week we will be back to the wonderful, pristine, perfect audio quality that you have become accustomed to from Terrifying Robot Dog. In the meantime, here's our waffle this week. Hello and welcome to Terrifying Robot Dog. I'm Jonathan Stark.
And I'm Kelly Shaver.
And we're here to talk about how technology is changing the way we interact with the world. This week, we're going to waffle about Falcon Heavy. Please stay tuned. Terrifying Robot Dog is next. Isn't this exciting?
This is exciting. This is the most exciting thing since something equally as exciting.
You got that right.
Yeah.
Sliced something. So can we recap this? I mean, I suppose there's not a human being alive that hasn't heard about this yet, but just to set the context for future listeners, because I know people are going to be listening to this well into the 2050s.
Yeah. Someone will be orbiting Mars in a Tesla listening to the podcast.
Exactly.
Yeah. The Falcon Heavy, which is the big giant rocket from SpaceX, launched on Tuesday, their first test launch, and it's a much larger payload than the Falcon 9 rocket that they've been launching, and it is like the next big stepping stone into the giant rocket to get us to Mars.
Yeah. Am I correct in recalling that it's the biggest rocket ever, or was Saturn V bigger?
Saturn V was, I don't know if it was bigger, but it was at least equally as large, if not bigger, but the Falcon Heavy is the biggest rocket in use today.
Mm-hmm. And I recall when it was first announced, before it was ever tested, which was just a gleam in Elon's eye. Mm-hmm. They did showed all of the main rocket types going back to probably the 60s and at scale. So they had really, really, you know, they got really, really tall. And then Falcon Heavy and Saturn V were like the two biggest ones. I don't remember. I seem to recall that Saturn V was a little bit taller.
I think so.
And then he reordered the visual list by price, and Saturn V stayed at the far right. Yeah. Falcon Heavy went all the way to the left.
Right.
So that's the thing I love about SpaceX is that really everything that Elon Musk undertakes seems to be, at least lately, it's not just this like academic project. It has economics driving everything. And the idea is like, you know, it'll completely change the game if we can
do it efficiently.
Yeah. Decrease the price by an order of magnitude. It just completely changes everything.
Yeah. I mean, at $90 million for one Falcon Heavy rocket launch, you know, in terms of launching a rocket, that's starting to get affordable.
Yeah. And the payload analogy that they keep using is that, and I'm sure it's not by accident, they keep saying that, what's the thing called? That's not fuselage. It's the fairing. No,
the fairing.
Is that what it's called? Where the stuff goes? Anyway, where the payload goes. I think, yes, it starts with an F, but now I'm spacing, so to speak. The
fairing.
That's what it's called.
Yes, that's what it's called.
That's like a fairing strip is like a, anyway. So they keep on saying that it can hold a 737 fully loaded. Mm-hmm. With passengers, you know, like being like, you know, we can take a 737 bunch of people up. You know, they could have said like 15 elephants, but they keep on referring to a passenger vehicle.
Right. I guess just so we can have some relatable sense of scale.
Yes. Yeah. And like number of people. So alive. So of course they needed to put some kind of payload in it. And as I'm sure everyone knows by now, they put Elon's cherry red convertible roadster Tesla vehicle sports car thingy.
Yes, with a dummy in the driver's seat wearing the SpaceX space suit.
I was really taken by surprise that the top was down.
I kind of was too.
It made me a little uncomfortable. It's like, well,
but the guy's in a space suit, so it makes me,
you know, it is true.
You know.
He's just sort of casually, he had like an arm on the thing.
Yeah.
But so like we now live in a universe, we live in a solar system. I almost said we live in a world, but no, we now live in a solar system where there is going to be a sports car orbiting the sun.
Yeah. It's a Trans Mars orbit. It'll go between Mars and Earth and the sun, and I just punched the microphone, and that's going to sound really bad because I was trying to draw an orbit in the air with my hand.
Yes, folks, that reminds me, by the way, where Skype is failing us. So we're recording with something weird, so we probably sound weird. Apologies for that.
Yeah, probably do. And there'll be less editing capabilities.
Yes, I can't edit out the mic punching, so take it easy over there, killer. So, of course, you know, I was talking to someone who's like, ah, oh, what a gimmick. Guy's like he's some like a snake oil salesman doing these dumb things. And I'm like, dude, you and I are currently talking about it.
Like, yeah. You know, I thought, oh, putting the roadster in it, it does sound kind of gimmicky. But then I'm like, you know, maybe it is gimmicky, but what it's doing is getting people excited about spaceflight again.
Right. And like, that's what I said.
The hype, and it's getting the excitement, and I'm interrupting you for a change. So I'm just going to roll with it. And like, just the whole atmosphere, watching the video, the whole atmosphere at the SpaceX mission control and everything, and just the public excitement, like, it felt like back in the Apollo days. Like, or what I imagined that would have felt like, since I was, you know, not yet born at that time. But
yeah, that was my feeling too. It's like he's making space travel cool. Because mm-hmm. for my entire adult life, it's been really boring not even corporate, government, blah, blah, blah. The space shuttle in the 80s was kind of like, oh, this is kind of like sort of sci-fi. But the problem with that was all of the rocket scientists were like, this is a terrible idea. This is going to end badly.
Yeah. We're never going to leave low Earth orbit.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it just, I mean, I have been obsessed with the early days of NASA and the Mercury through Apollo programs probably since I was like five. And I mean, to me, there's a magic to those early days that the later days of the space program haven't had. And I guess it's just the sense of exploration and wonder. And I feel like SpaceX is giving us that again.
Yep. And it's not this stodgy, like, you know, super dry scientific, like, blah. Mm-hmm. It's like fun. It seems fun now.
It does. And I mean, don't get me wrong. I think some of the scientific missions NASA is doing are great and beneficial, and some of them are really interesting on different levels, but they don't have that sort of fun atmosphere and excitement and wonder and just like, you know, let's go out and do something crazy just to see if we can.
I can't name one NASA mission. I can't name one. I mean, International Space Station, that's not NASA, right? That's the only thing I can, I guess, Hubble Telescope. Yeah, like, when was that,
Cassini,
the 90s?
Cassini Saturn.
No idea what you're talking about. So it's like, you know what I mean? Like, it just doesn't penetrate the dopey everyday person context like me. I'm referring to myself there. It's like, I just, you know, but you shoot a sports car into orbit around the sun, people are going to talk about that.
Yeah. And like he was saying, you got to have, you know, they have to launch with some kind of mass anyway to simulate a payload. So might as well make it something interesting and fun that people are going to get excited about.
Mm-hmm.
And, did you watch the video? I mean, of course, we all know by now that tragically the center core did not make its landing on the drone ship.
See, I did not know that yet, actually.
Yeah, it did not. But see, here's the thing. And they're just like, yeah, these stereotypical or these traditionally disposable parts of a spaceship that can never get reused, we're just going to turn them around and fly them back to Earth. And these two side boosters are going to do this beautifully timed and just beautifully like looking like tandem landing back at Cape Canaveral. And then we're just going to take the center core and we're going to fly it out into the middle of the ocean, and our just autonomous drone ship will just go and pick it up. And I'm just like, did you hear what you just said?
I know.
Mean, yeah. I mean, the center core didn't make it. I believe it didn't have enough fuel to relight all the engines that it needed to slow down enough. So it hit the water pretty hard and broke apart on impact and did some damage to the drone ship that was there to pick it up as well. But still a huge success. That was the very first test flight. This was a huge success.
Yeah. And so I think the fact that it was, I don't even know if it was broadcast anywhere but YouTube. Like, I watched it. I watched the recording. I didn't watch it live, but I watched it on YouTube, and they had multiple cameras. You could cut to different angles, basically. You could see the crowd, and then they had all of these commentators, and then they had multiple like GoPros on it was like a sporting event almost. It felt really, this is going to sound dumb because it's like a cutting edge rocket ship, but it felt very modern. Like at the media event itself.
Right.
It felt very modern. It was almost like New Year's Eve almost. There's this countdown and there are all these sort of, you know, attractive young TV commentator type people. Although one of them did have Robert Redford's hair from the 70s. I don't know how he managed that.
Yes, I noticed.
I was like, he did that on purpose. That's like a space thing. So it was just super cool. And they started out, there was one guy who was just literally a rocket scientist who was hilarious. Mm-hmm. I'm sure the internet is crawling with memes of this guy, but you know, he's like saying what's going to happen. And all of them were like, look, this is a test. They were clearly concerned that it was going to go horribly wrong. And then everyone's right. going to be bummed. They're like, don't be bummed. This is a test. We don't know what's going to happen. It's a test. It could, you know, the idea is that they're going to land here. Might not. Might not be a good place to stand over by those landing pads.
Exactly, yeah.
And so really, when they lost the camera feed on the center core, I was kind of like, I mean, if something was going to go wrong, that's the perfect one to go wrong.
Yeah, yeah, that's the one that went wrong and didn't endanger any people and didn't compromise the mission of the, you know, I guess the first stage of the rocket on its continuing mission to the insertion into this orbit. You know, it didn't compromise any of that or anything. So, I mean, if you got to pick a failure, that's the one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, if the car was lost, then that would be super scary for the next people that go up.
Right.
Because eventually there'll be people in it. So first test, the spaceship doesn't blow up. Great. We lost an engine. Bomber.
After we were done with it,
right. Which is normally the way it always works.
Yeah. And that particular one wasn't slated to be reused anyway, so.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's an older model, and they're going to go with newer models of engines in future flights, so.
Well, I can see why. That one's clearly faulty.
I mean, clearly.
I mean, how hard could it be to land a rocket engine on an autonomous drone in the middle of the ocean?
Yeah. You know,
jeez.
I do that at least two or three times a week.
Get your act together.
Yeah. Kira's been doing that since first grade.
That robotics class is off the hook. So here was the other thing that I found super interesting was that the two side engines had already been used before. Like they were hand-me-downs.
Yeah, they were hand-me-downs that had been, I can't remember if they said how many times they'd been used before, but they've been used at least once.
I think they said once. Okay. Yeah. And but I mean, it's a full test. It's like a real test. Like they used stuff.
Yeah.
And it still worked.
Yeah. I mean, when I heard that, I was like, well, that's kind of weird. They're testing this new thing and they're not using new engines. But now that you put it like that, it's like, well, the whole purpose of this, or a large part of the purpose of this, is to be able to reuse bits of the spaceship. So I guess testing the reuse of those bits of the rocket is equally important.
Mm-hmm. So do you watched it live though, right?
Yeah.
Man. So I didn't, but I watched it. Like I didn't fast forward or anything. And I didn't actually know what happened. I had heard a couple of sort of spoilers and I knew that if it had gone horribly wrong, I would have heard. So I pretty much knew it was going to be at least relatively successful. Mm-hmm. And still, I was shaking when that thing took off. I was physically, my body was coursing with adrenaline. I can't even explain why.
Yeah, there were times during watching it all that I was almost in tears at several points of just like happy tears and just excitement and overwhelming sense of things words I can't express on the podcast. And it just, and you know, and Kira watched it live at school, and she's like, "Mom, we've never watched anything, any shuttle flights or anything launch at school."
Mm-hmm.
And I remember watching a few of them when I was a kid in the 80s at school, but
yeah, me too.
Even by that point, it was, you know, just like,
yeah, it was getting passe.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, everywhere, all of the online communities that I'm in, and I'm in some, there's one in particular that's a really weird one, mm-hmm. real like cyberpunk sort of anarchist type people, like techno anarchist type people.
Mm-hmm.
And even they were talking about it. they were like, damn, you know, because I went back through, it was like a Slack room, we went back through the chat log because I was curious what they were going to say.
Right.
And they were like, you know, OMG, just like the rest of the world. And, you know, but in real time, I was seeing it later. So it was like, the synchronized landing of the two side things just blew everybody's minds. I mean, that was like from a movie.
Yeah. I mean, I have a friend at NASA and wow. and she was just like flipping out. It's like, this is incredible.
Yeah.
And she's, yeah. Yeah. And I mean, but yeah, it's like, I saw that excitement everywhere. Like, yeah, I run a private forum that's just like a group of moms that all started talking together when our kids were like two. And we just continued to like keep up with each other. And over the years, as our kids have grown up, and it's like everyone there was just like excited. And it's like, you know, these are just like, these aren't techie people.
Yeah. Erica saw it live before. Yeah. She was like, did you see the Falcon Heavy launch? And I was like, oh, was that today? And she's like, yeah. She's like, I was crying. She was like, I was crying like a baby.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, now I don't feel so bad that I don't feel like I was the only one now.
No, I was like every chemical in my body was released simultaneously. I was like, well, I mean, I don't know. It's hard to describe because, I mean, I'm just watching this like recorded video image, like who cares? But it has something to do for me with, it's almost like the number of eyeballs on it, but also it's kind of like watching the Olympics in a way where, you know, and they had a shot of the control room and there had to be 100 people in the control room, at desks.
At least easily.
Yeah. Not crowd people, like people who are involved. Right. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, probably every single person in that room has practically bet their life on this. Not literally, but like their home, like, you know, their
career, future, right. Stability.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And so you're like pulling for them all or something.
Right. Right. And I think this launch did a really, well, I don't know about really good, but it did a better than most other launches that I've seen televised, sense of like demonstrating just how freaking complicated it is to get things into space and how many people are involved and how much, I mean, just because you could see the crowds and they were talking about the details and it's just like, you could see the crowd of workers and SpaceX workers there watching the launch and they're working in mission control. And it was just like, there are so many people that have invested like countless hours and brain power and time into this. Like, you think launching a rocket, okay, we're going to put a really big engine on this little capsule and shoot it into the air. But it's so complicated, such a complicated thing. And it makes me think, you know, like, it's just like this is still a really hard thing to do. Like, you know, what was it like back in the 60s when your translunar injection orbit was calculated on some guy's slide rule?
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, there coincidentally, or maybe not, it probably wasn't coincidental. On LinkedIn, somebody posted a picture of a woman who at the time was in her 30s and wrote the guidance system for one of the Apollo missions. And like, there she is, like this sort of, you know, you look like my next door neighbor, actually. And she's got this tractor feed printout that is as tall as she was, of like binder on top of binder on top of binder on top of binder, which was the code printed out. And
I used to have somewhere a copy of the guidance and navigation control code for the Apollo, for the Saturn V.
Which probably fits in like, it's probably 64 kilobytes.
It's all assembly.
Oh, really?
Yeah. At least what I had was assembly.
That is a language that I looked at once, maybe.
Yeah.
Like, am I going to learn Pascal or assembly? Was it called assembly or assembler?
I don't know.
I don't remember.
Before my time.
Oh, thanks. It wasn't before mine.
Well, you know, you are a decade my senior.
True. And I did get a computer when I was about 8.
Yeah.
So we were the first kids on the block. So, all right. So what does this mean? Like, I feel like I didn't even, when I watched it, I was sort of, I think, more overwhelmed by the win for all of the people that it tried so hard to make it work. Mm-hmm. But of course, the bigger, I haven't watched a thing after. I've seen that it looks like Elon's been interviewed a few times and there's probably tons of 50 million follow-up videos. I haven't watched any of them. Yeah, I actually plan to. It sounds like fun, but you got to imagine, like, for him, like, okay, Miles, he's got like this like 50 mile long timeline, and he just like ticked off. He's like, okay, over, check. No, next thing, you know, like, because the big picture is, I feel like the big picture had nothing to do with the overwhelming emotion that I felt when I was watching it. I feel like the big picture thing is almost so incomprehensible that that's not even a factor.
Yeah, I feel like probably so. I mean, I'm sure there were more practical plans for the use of this rocket like today, but I'm sure it also fits into a larger picture of Elon's goal of getting people living permanently on Mars, in that it's just another stepping stone in the process. But I've actually heard that demand for this rocket is now less than it was when they started developing it, partly because they've improved the efficiency of the Falcon 9 so much that there's less need for the Falcon Heavy now. Because initially the payloads the Falcon 9 could take up were much smaller, so they were going to launch the Falcon Heavy to do the really big stuff. And it turns out that there's not a whole lot of really big stuff. There's just a lot of medium stuff that the Falcon 9 can now also do. So I'm curious to see, you know, is this something we're going to see a lot of these launching, or is it an occasional thing, or is this basically just going to act as a vessel in both the literal and figurative sense for technical and scientific growth in getting us toward that bigger step to the next thing on the way to Mars?
Oh, that's interesting. Like nobody has something big enough to require.
Right.
That's funny.
Yeah, he'll have to create something big.
Well, they did also announce that they could use it for intraplanetary travel.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like, you know, San Francisco to Singapore in 50 minutes for, you know, whatever, however, you know, 300 people.
Billions. Yeah.
Yeah, who knows how much it costs, but, you know, 300 people want to go all the way around the world in 45 minutes.
Right.
Here you go.
I'd do it.
Oh, my God. Yeah, please. Maybe. Oh, I would totally. See, that's funny. I don't have any interest in going to space, but I would totally do that. I have no interest whatsoever in going to space. I would positive I would freak out, no doubt.
Oh, I would go to space.
Nah, not me. I mean, low Earth orbit. Yeah, sure, whatever.
But, yeah, I don't think I think I would. As much as I love the idea of space exploration and space travel and all of that, I think realistically, I would probably freak out too much to go beyond low Earth orbit.
Yeah, I would be amazing, but there are plenty of other more easy, like on my bucket list. I have a lot of other things on my bucket list besides like seeing the Earth, like, you know, the size of a marble. Mm-hmm. I would definitely have a panic attack. So, but the idea of flying to Tokyo in 45 minutes is just like, and the what it would feel like, feeling the G's, the just experiencing the whole thing, being that close to technology that was that sophisticated.
Right.
A spaceport, for crying out loud. A spaceport.
Yeah.
I'm trying to come up with the villainy and scum line, but I can't do it. please. Like, you know, the first one's going to be called Mos Eisley, right?
Yeah, well, probably. I mean, what they're thinking of calling the big rocket Heart of Gold.
Mm-hmm. Which, you know, don't panic.
Yeah. Space is big. Really, really big.
Oh, man. So, all right. I mean, have we fanboyed enough? Or
I think we have. There's a video I want to link to in the show notes put out by Smarter Every Day on YouTube that's just kind of like this immersive audio experience of being at the launch. And
oh, yeah, it's like binaural audio.
Yeah, and it's really cool.
Oh, I saw that, but I didn't listen to it.
Oh, yeah, you should put on a good set of headphones and listen to it.
Sweet.
It's so cool.
Yeah, happy Friday, people.
Yeah, just something fun.
Mm. All right, cool. Well, I guess that's our show for this week. I'm Jonathan Stark.
And I'm Kelly Shaver.
And we hope you join us again next week for Terrifying Robot Dog. Bye.
Bye.
Are your shins terribly itchy? Are you tired of scratching your calves with your toenails? Are your sweat socks covered with blood? This Christmas, treat yourself to Sand Pants by Ronco.